Such false starts were not unusual. Several weeks after her brother left Ada, Annette received a letter from the warden. She assumed it was correspondence of a routine matter. Perhaps she was right, given the trigger-happy mood at McAllister. "Dear Ms. Hudson, it is with empathy that I must inform you that your brother, Ronald Keith Williamson, number 134846, is scheduled to be executed on 18 July 1988 at 12:02 a.m. at the Oklahoma State Penitentiary. Your brother will be moved from his current cell to another cell on the morning prior to the execution date, and at that time his visiting hours will be changed and will be as follows: 9 a.m. to 12 noon, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., and 6 to 8 p.m. Visiting during the last 24 hours will be limited to clergymen, attorney of record, and two other visitors who have been approved by the warden. Your brother has the right to have 5 witnesses present at the execution. These witnesses must be approved by the warden. As difficult as it may be, funeral arrangements must be considered, and these arrangements are the responsibility of the family. If this responsibility is not assumed by the family, the state will attend to the burial. Please inform us of your decision in this matter. If further information is needed, or if I may be of assistance in other ways, please contact me. Sincerely, James L. Saffel, Warden." The letter was dated June 21, 1988, less than 2 months after Ronnie arrived at McAllister. Annette knew that appeals were automatic in capital murder cases. Perhaps someone should inform the authorities in charge of the executions. As unsettling as the letter was, she was able to set it aside. Her brother was innocent and would someday be proven so in a new trial. She adamantly believed this and would never waver. She read her Bible, prayed continually, and met often with her pastor. Still, she had to ask herself what kind of people were running the prison over at McAllister. After a week or so on the row, Ron walked to his door one day and said hello to the man in cell 9, directly across the hall, 12 feet away. Greg Wilhoit said hello, and they exchanged a few words. Neither was anxious for a long conversation. The next day, Ron said hello again, and they chatted briefly. The next day, Greg mentioned that he was from Tulsa. Ron once lived there with a guy named Stan Wilkins. "Is he an iron worker?" Greg asked. Yes, he was, and Greg knew him. The coincidence was amusing and broke the ice. They talked about old friends and places in Tulsa. Greg was also 34 years old, also loved baseball, also had 2 sisters who were supporting him. And he was also innocent. It was the beginning of a deep friendship that helped them both survive their ordeal. Greg invited Ron to attend chapel, a weekly service held off the row and attended by many capital defendants. Cuffed and shackled, the inmates were herded into a small room where they were led in worship by a saintly chaplain named Charles Story. Ron and Greg seldom missed the services and always sat together.